Welcome to Unwrap with J-Rap. I am your host, J-Rap. Thank you for listening.
It's been a while. Sorry, I still don't have a studio. A lot of things have changed since last podcast, which was November 15th, 2018. And I think this is a decent sound, but it's still not a studio, so it's still not where I want it to be. But at least it's better than what it was. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I think so. I think it's better. I had a little epiphany today. And I haven't talked with the person that actually was the root of my epiphany. So I don't want to give out his website or his name just yet until I have confirmed with him that it's okay to. But I did reach out and send him a message and say something to him. And I just haven't heard anything back yet. So I was going to talk about being on ship and the non-military ships, the civilian contracted ships. I was going to talk about that a little bit. But his epiphany is really, it's more of how my life is right now, because there's been like a lot of changes, like I said, a lot of good changes, a lot of positive changes, and I don't want to lose my audience due to anything revolving around, you know, the current status of, I guess, the society. So I don't talk much about politics, well, I don't talk any about politics or religion. Or anything that could possibly split views of people or make an audience shy away because it's not what they want to hear. And yeah, I'm still not going to get into politics at all just because that's not what my podcast is for. I strongly believe in my views, but this is not the place for that. This platform is not for mine or anyone else's political views. Yeah, it's just unwrapping my thoughts, which is why it's Unwrap J-Rap, which is me. So it's basically just unwrapping my thoughts. And with this recent epiphany, it's hard to explain, so I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to get into it and get into the weeds of it. So we know that there's a huge opioid crisis in the world, but in our country, in the United States. And there's a lot of reasons for it. I'm not going to get into all of that. I just want to bring in the focus to the reality of it that a lot of people don't know. So I didn't know this before because I've never been around. Yeah, I've had people that are around in my life that were alcoholics, but I never had anybody really close that I saw day to day that was an alcoholic, and not until the Marine Corps anyway. I saw them there, and I've never seen any addictions to drugs or anything like that from people personally that I grew up with that I knew while they were active in an addiction. And I knew there's people that, you know, I knew before that had gotten addicted to something or whatever, but I wasn't around them on a daily basis or anything. So it's a lot different when you're outside that scope. And the scope I have now is a lot different. There's a trend, and the trend is called the cycle of addiction. The cycle of addiction is when people who are active in addiction, and one way or another, they want to end their addiction for one reason or another. It could be because their family, they realize where they're at. It could be because they almost died. Maybe they were resuscitated from Narcan, I think it is. Maybe they somehow got brought back. Maybe they relapsed really bad after they tried to go clean on their own and it just didn't work. They want to end their addiction. So they go to rehab and they go through either a 12-step program or they go through like a 30-day or 90-day or 45-day treatment. Some of them, they go to a religious facility or a faith-based program, and they go for sometimes up to a year, and then they leave there with all intentions of doing the right thing, of not relapsing, of focusing on their family or their parents or their whatever it is that they have, their faith, or whatever it is, but they try really hard and they mean it. And then something happens in their life. A lot of times, from what I've seen so far, they have every intention of staying clean. And they leave a facility that has an extreme amount of structure, some of them anyway. Some of them are almost like a mental institution where you're locked in a facility and you can't leave it. And then there's other ones that are voluntary, like the faith-based ones or you're voluntarily there. You are able to leave whenever you want, but you're there for a reason, and you want to get clean, and you want to stay clean, and you want to change your life. So even people that aren't religious, they'll go there just because, you know, they know that that's better than any other program they might have been through before, or maybe they heard it's a good program, or maybe they want to find, you know, the meaning of life, and so they think that somehow maybe that's how. So regardless of the reason, they go into treatment, and then they come out, like I said, no structure. There's no structure when they come out. And typically, they go right back where they came from because it's comfortable. It's what they know. It's like anybody. They hit rock bottom in life, and they, with all good intentions, you know, they try, and they decide that, you know, maybe, oh, one beer's, you know, not that bad, or, you know, I'm just going to take one hit off a joint, and, you know, not that big of a deal. It's just a little weed, or it's just a beer. And, you know, then the stress builds, and they go right back into that cycle of addiction. And if they're lucky, they get to go to another program in a facility where, again, there's structure, and they have every intent of becoming clean again and staying clean, staying sober. And I've seen some of these people go for a complete year in a program. I mean, I didn't see them in the program. I met them after, but they would go through a program for a year, faith-based, non-faith-based, 12 steps, whatever it is. And then they go right back to where they're comfortable, or they are doing really well, and you see them start to do really well, and you're proud of how they're doing. And then all of a sudden, just something happens. Some of it's a chemical dependency, and some of it is, I know after 6 months, something happens with the body where they're physically wanting, and mentally it's just on their mind constantly, and it's a lot harder for them to resist it. So again, when you're not inside of a facility where you have no access and it's really strict, then, you know, they'll find the dope man. That's what they call it, the dope man. They'll find the dope man, or they'll drink, you know, they'll go to the bar and drink. And it's really sad because I've seen people do this, and people that I got to know pretty well relapsed. And it hits you really hard because they want to do well. They want to be clean. They don't want to live a life of addiction. I mean, they, you know, when you talk to them, they know it's a dark hole that they go down. And there's obviously at the root of everything, there's a reason why they go there, or why they want to be there, because they really don't want to be there. It's just numb, I think, or I don't know. I haven't been there, so I can't pretend to speak for them. But anyway, so my point of this that I had was that this podcast can be a little bit different today because of the things that I've seen in my life and that have happened in my life. So again, I said I'm not going to get political, and I said I'm not going to get into religion and all that stuff. I'm going to dabble because I do have a faith. I do have faith, I should say. And I'm not going to shy away from it, but I'm not going to preach to everyone out there because I respect that some people don't want to be preached at. And if somebody wants to get a hold of me and know more, they can. So that being said, I go to a church, and at this church, we have a person that's in that. How do I say this? He was an addict before, and he went through what's called Teen Challenge. It's a faith-based program. I don't know how long he was there. I believe he was there about a year. Most people are there about a year. He was in Adult Teen Challenge. And he graduated from there, and I don't know how long he was in or out of that adult teen challenge, but he realized that while he was there, multiple people in and out of addiction, coming out of facilities and going right back into the same facility. And sometimes we're talking like 5, 6, 7, 8 times these people going through the same exact program. Some of them going an entire year in a program and go right back out and get addicted to something or go back into addiction and then come right back. So it's just, he saw that and realized there's something that has to change, because right now there's a lot of programs out there. There's inpatient and there's outpatient, and there's 12 steps that you just go to a meeting. There's the AA, there's NA, there's, I don't know, there's ones for people that have gambling problems. There's one for people that have pornography problems, addiction with pornography and gambling and many other things. So whatever it is that's their vice or their go-to that they're addicted to, they have a program for that, whatever it is. Some of them are, like I said, inpatient. Some of them are not. There's nothing for them when they get out of a program other than NA or AA or some type of, you know, you go once a week or twice a week or three times a week or every, you know, whatever, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 7 to 9 or whatever. And you show up there and you do your, you know, you get your coin or whatever it is. They have those, but that's not really accountability. You know, you're around a bunch of other people that are also battling the temptations of whatever their addiction is. So it's not really a place to go that is going to harvest good things because they want the same thing that you want, but they have the same temptations that you have. And some people just don't have willpower. And some people, they have willpower. It's just life gets hard and they give in. And I'm not being judgmental. If you know me, which some people know me very well, you know that I'm not judgmental. And I tell people this recently that I've met and that I've gotten to know really well, and some that I'll get to know a lot more, is if you feel like I'm judging you, you're judging yourself. And I say that because, you know, everybody's judgmental at some point where they judge somebody. Just, you know, when you see somebody, you automatically have a judgmental thought, whether it's, well, that person looks like they're not very nice, or that person looks like they're very nice, or that's a good looking person, or that's not a good looking person, or, you know, whatever. And it, you might not like dwell on that and think that they're a horrible person or anything, but everybody has a judgment in their head, at least, when they see somebody. And anybody who tells you they don't is a liar, because everybody thinks something when they see someone. When you walk by a person that's on the street that's homeless, you have a thought. It could be compassionate. It could be, this is disgusting, I gotta go on the other side of the street. It could be, what can I do for this person? It could be, I wonder how that person got there. I mean, there's a lot of things you could think. Everybody thinks something, and that is judgment, but there's different kinds of judgment. And what I'm talking about is when somebody feels like they're being judged, I want them to know that when I'm talking to them and I'm getting to know them, that I'm not judging them in a negative light. If they feel that way, it's because they themselves are judging themselves because they have a bad self-esteem and bad image of themselves. And there's a lot of reasons why that can happen. It could be because of how they grew up, or it could be just they're a perfectionist to themselves, or they can never be good enough. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and I won't get into all that now because I'm not a psychologist. I can't explain why all these people think certain ways they think, and everyone's different. So the guy that I was talking about, I'm not going to throw his name out there, but he, I don't even know how he started it. I'd have to interview him in order to get the entire story out because I don't know exactly how it all started. I just know that he had this vision and saw what was and what should be and what isn't, and that vision was what should be. So he started a place. It's called Absolute Ministries. It's a place that's committed to providing the members that go there with a comfortable place to live with personal freedom, but also with limited structure and accountability while growing in maturity and responsibility. The foundation of Absolute is all about Jesus Christ. And they say that they know that spiritual growth is essential to successfully leaving the past behind and acclimating to new life in the real world. And that's so, it is true. I mean, again, I'm not trying to preach to anybody, but this is something that's true. And I know this from seeing it, that I know people that were atheists, and I know people that are agnostic, and, you know, whatever it is that these people believe or don't believe. You know, some people are like, I don't believe anything. When people get shot at, everybody believes in God. And they might not say they believe in God, but everybody's praying. It's pretty humbling to see a person that does not believe in God suddenly look up in their mind like there's something else out there, and they know it. Nobody can look around and say there's nothing out there. We know that there's something out there. We know that there is a God. Whatever you believe, whether you're agnostic or you're, I don't know, atheist, or maybe you're a theist and you just don't believe in the same God. Either way, there is a higher rate of success with people that have a faith in something and a faith in Jesus Christ specifically when it comes to these type of things, addiction and whatnot. So what they expect, or what's to be expected for these guys in Absolute, is they're going to live with and learn to build relationships with other people. It gets gender-based, so the men are with the men and the women are with the women, who come from similar situations but who may at different points be different in their process of growth. And they're going to be mentored one-on-one with someone who's a mentor. And that person's primary interest is in their spiritual and emotional growth, as well as maturity and responsibility. And I've been blessed with being a mentor. And I don't like that term personally, because I feel like a mentor is someone that pours into someone and doesn't get anything back. You have a mentor and you have a mentee. So I don't like the term, but I don't know how to explain it. I don't like the term because it seems like a hierarchy. Like I'm a mentor of someone and they're below me. And I don't think that way at all, because I have learned so much in the last 2 months from these guys that I have been around. These guys, these women and men, who are members of Absolute, meaning they've decided to change their life and come to Absolute. They've gone through a program beforehand and graduated, an accredited program or whatever it's called, the specific kinds that they have to go through. And they've been okayed to come into the program or to the ministry. And they're expected to take care of themselves, take care of their space, and contribute to the overall good of the house. The women's house just opened up last Sunday. And the men's house has been open for, I think, 10 years now. And the men's house is 2 full townhouses. So 4 front doors. And there's 3 bedrooms in each one. And there's a bunk bed in each room for the men's house. So you have 6 people per house. And you have 4 houses. So you have 24 men that live in these houses. And it's expanding. It's going to grow, because this ministry is getting really big. The women's house, like I said, just opened. It's in a different location. It's set up differently, but the same idea. And they have a woman that is, or women that are staff there, that are also either former addicts that have gone through the same thing, just like the person that started this ministry, or they are in some way qualified to be in a position of helping these people. And it's not just a mentor. They're more than that. There's board members and everything else. So anyway, I'm going to move along. So they're expected to be honest and learn transparency. Basically, it's vulnerability. There will be lots of grace provided to help them learn and trust the honesty process. So if any of you know people that are in active addiction or have been in active addiction, you know that there's a lot of things said and not a lot of things done with what was said. So there's the, I promise I'll do this, or I'm going to do this, and I think they mean it. I really think they mean it. And sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're lying to you. Sometimes they're lying to themselves. And it's really hurtful when you see someone that their parents are just broken because 6, 7, 8, 9 times they've been through some type of treatment. And every time it's, I changed. I'm going to change. I'm different now. And then they go right back into it. And I think they have every intention to do well. And the parents, I mean, it wrecks them. And I've seen that with my eyes. I haven't met some of the parents, but I've seen the guys that, and I know personally some of the guys that have relapsed a few times. And they're not at Absolute anymore because they relapsed multiple times. And grace is given, and they were given another chance, but one of the guys relapsed 3 times in, well, 2 times in less than a week, and then went to a 30-day program. He was told after the 30 days he could come back as long as he graduated the 30-day. And they have the ability at that place to do a 12-step as well. Insurance covered it. I talked to him specifically, and he told me that he's thinking about doing this 12-step. The full 12-step is about 90 days. So it's, you get about 4 steps per 30 days, somewhere around there. So he was done with his 3 or 4 steps, maybe even 5. I think he's working on his 5th step, and about the 30-day mark. And instead of calling the person at Absolute Ministries that he needed to call to arrange how he was going to get back, he went with one of the guys that he was in treatment with. They went out, they got the dope man, and they were smoking meth in the motel room in that city for the weekend. And then, you know, of course, I found out because the person in charge let me know. And I reached out to him and sent him a text, and I didn't get anything back, so I called him, and he didn't answer, like, hello, but he pressed the button to answer his phone, and immediately hung up, because I heard the phone, you know, making the sound in the background that he answered it, and I don't know, he didn't want to talk to me or something. Well, then he sent me a text that said, in treatment and. That was it. So I was like, okay, so he's either in treatment or he's telling me he's in treatment. And I want to believe that he's in treatment. So I reached out to the facility where he was at, and I was on the ROI there. So I called them, talked to the lady that I had met before when I went to visit this guy to take him out, because after 14 days, they get to leave for the day and then go back. And I was with him that entire time that I was with him. He didn't use anything while we were there or while I was there. And I thought he was doing well. And then we brought him back, and you know, that's when I met the lady. Well, I asked her, I said, hey, this is Jay. And, you know, this guy said he was back. I know you probably might not be able to tell me if he's back or not. I don't know. I was on the ROI. I don't know if I still am. I don't know how that works, but he sent me this text that said in treatment and. That's all it said. I'm just hoping he's in treatment. She said, yes, he's in treatment. I said, okay, good. I said, the guy that he left with, did he come back to treatment too? She said, he did. So I said, okay. Well, that's good and not good. It's good because, of course, we want both of them to get treated. It's bad because the temptation for them leaving and seeing the dope man again is pretty high. So we've had many conversations. I thought we had some pretty good conversations. I thought he had the best of intentions. I think he wanted to change. I really do. But something has him slipping. And I want to find out what it is, but he's got to be clean long enough to have a conversation. And that hasn't been able to happen yet. So anyway, so let me move along with this, with what they do at Absolute. So the other thing they do is, like I said, grace is provided. He was given grace. He was told he could go back after 30 days. He didn't. Instead, he went and got high, and then he went right back to the treatment center. And he called me and actually, you know, asked me some questions, talked to him for a bit. And then I asked the person that's in charge or the head of the ministry. I asked him if he was able to come back, because he said he knows he needs to be back in Absolute. And, you know, he didn't say he said it's not off the table, but we'll see. So I talked to him, and then he said, you have to graduate your 30 day. He said, I know you did 30 days, but you have to graduate it. You can't just be there 30 days and then leave and relapse. You have to graduate, and then we'll see. So grace is provided, because in any other place, they'd be kicked out and they wouldn't be allowed back. Moving along, they are given assistance to find employment and clean up some past issues, be that warrants or probation or whatever. They gain transportation, and they are helped to manage their finances. So some of the transportation, they can't have a license because they've had DUIs or some type of a charge, or there's suspended license or whatever. So there's staff that will get them to work. That's one of their responsibilities, is to get them to work or to wherever they need to go see the probation officer or whatever court charges, you know, court cases, stuff like that. And they, like I said, they're taught to manage their finances as well. And then they're expected to engage in some kind of curriculum that's catered to their greatest needs, and to study the Word of God, the Bible. That's not just encouraged, but they're expected to, as part of being faith-based. And they're encouraged to reconcile broken relationships. So parents, ex-girlfriends, ex-wives, ex-husbands, ex-whatever it is that, you know, friends, people that they might have really done some horrible things to in the past, to reconcile those broken relationships so that they can move on in life. And then make new relationships, attend a group thing at night. It's we call it chapel, and find and serve in a local church and become an integral part of the community. So actually doing things in the community in the area. That is basically the type of thing that Absolute is about. And it is awesome to me to see some of these guys that, you know, I don't know very many of the women there. I don't know any of them personally. I've met two of them. But to see these guys change in just weeks. I mean, I've been there a couple. I've known about this ministry for a while because it's, like I said, it's affiliated in kind of a way with my church that I go to. So there's part of it there. The guy that started this all, he is a member of our church. So there's really, I don't know how to say it. It's really just the watching these guys change, like I said, in just a short amount of time, it's amazing. You know, you're going to have guys that relapse. It's going to happen. And you're going to have people that do exactly what they wanted to do from the beginning in the cycle of addiction and live a better life, reconcile relationships. And, you know, in my, like I said, my personal opinion, they find a relationship with Jesus Christ, with God. And they are changed by that. And it's amazing to see some of these guys, all of them, that change in a good way. It's just like when I see them, I never think of them as anything but anybody else that's at our church. To be honest, I've never thought like, oh man, these guys are ex-junkies. They think that we think that, but we don't. And it's amazing to see that, you know, we have small groups that we meet in at from our church, and some of them are in our small group. We invite them to our small group. And I don't know what they think because I haven't asked them yet. I know some of them how they think because some of them have told me, but I haven't asked a lot of them. But I know that there's a level of doubt that they have in their minds, and they think that maybe people think of them as what they were, or what they think of themselves as what they were. And because they think or thought that, they assume that we think that. And it's so cool to see these guys come to a place where nobody knows them and they have no clue about these people's past whatsoever until they say so. And when we tell them, hey, we got some of the Absolute guys coming, they're not thinking, oh my goodness, I got my kids here. I don't want my kids around them. None of them think that way. Because the guys that are in Absolute have a desire to change. So we don't view them as their past. We view them as how they are now. That they're making changes and they're not the same person that they were. So we shouldn't treat them like they're the same person that they were. And we don't. I don't even think it's a conscious thing. I think it's just we don't. I've never ever thought by looking at them, even when I hear their story, I've seen pictures of them in the past, I never go, I don't want this guy around my kids. I have two daughters and another daughter on the way. And I never think, I don't want my kid around this person. Now, in general, I don't leave my daughters around people unattended anyway. So I wouldn't leave my kids with them by themselves. Not because of who they are or what their past was, just because I don't do that anyway. It's just not right. And you know, most people should understand that. Regardless, though, I don't look at their past and go, oh man, this person used to do this, that, and the other. You know, they used to shoot up dope for, you know, like a couple years straight living on the street. I can't have that person around my kid. I don't ever think that, ever. That never crosses my mind. But they think that that crosses our minds. And it's amazing to me to see the impact that it has on them when they start to realize that we care about them and we love them no different than the rest of us in the same church or in the same community in the area. That we don't treat them any differently because of who they were. We treat them and try to treat them as Christ sees all of us. We're all his children. So why would we have a view of them like that? We don't view other people in the church like that. So why would we view them like that? So it's just really amazing. Anyway, I got to wrap this up because I'm going to chapel right now to meet with them, and it's going to be awesome. So I don't know how the next podcast is going to go. It's going to be different. I'm going to try and see if maybe some of the guys might let me interview them. I probably won't give their names because they probably don't want to, or maybe just a first name. I don't know. Maybe an AA pseudonym or something. We'll see. But until next time.
Hopefully I keep you guys motivated, and hopefully you guys give me a review. A 5-star review and rating would be greatly appreciated. Thank you for all the support that I get from you guys. I really appreciate it.